and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a unique episode of the Trash Tapes, where one man's trash is another man's treasure. I'm your host, Johan Schiphol, talking to you all on my own from my isolation station. This episode is a special one, a lost tape, as you were, where I was not only joined by my regular victim, Edward Harvey, but also by our first ever guest, filmmaker and close friend, Sophie Black. It was recorded almost a year ago, linking with our Batman-themed month of content and to coincide with the launch of Sophie's amazing Poison Ivy fan film, Growing Shadows, which is now available to see in all its glory on YouTube. Would strongly recommend you checking it out. The reason why this episode is coming out now instead of then is due to time. As you all know now, the global pandemic is happening. A lot of us are now being asked to stay indoors where possible and to self-isolate. It was here I was rummaging through some of the older Trash Tape recordings and found this episode. Back then, we were following a very different format, which was a lot harder to edit, and overall became a real chore to do. It included things such as commentary, running jokes, loads of different extra things, and it became, well, hard and no longer fun. So I put it on the shelf, thinking I would go back to it eventually. I never really did. But finding this episode and listening back to it recently, now that I'm trapped in my bunker, I realize how much fun all of us were having in this recording. There were so many laughs, lots of insight and nerdy banter. It felt a shame for it to never be released. So I decided to give it another shot, using the newer format that Ed and I have developed for the podcast recently, and all the joy just came back. And in fact, may inspire me to go back to some of the other lost tapes and see if I can have it up and ready for you, so all of you can have some new content for your beautiful ear holes during this really scary time. This was a wonderful episode, and I'm so glad that I can finally share it with you all. So ladies and gentlemen, here is the ice pun-filled and rose-thorny review of the legendary Batman and Robin, featuring Sophie Black. Enjoy.
Oh, I know. We'll remember it all.
Sound, speed.
Okay, so we are recording. We are rolling. Don't worry about it. It's fine. This is literally, do not worry. I will edit this all out.
Oh, my God.
You've got to put the safety
in. No, don't you dare. That was so loud.
No, we can't. We can't be rude to our guest.
Thank you.
She can't belch. Not without our consent. You're allowed to belch.
Thank you.
We'll just sign
that one with
contract.
But release form. Waiver. Release form.
But waiver.
But release waiver. Yeah. It's a waiver.
I like a but release form. I give you permission to use my burp. I don't. That's an example.
There we go.
Is that a burp off?
It's not my fault.
Your pinky went up like a posh person drinking tea. Boo.
Boo words.
I was saying boo words.
Fantastic. This is just a start. We haven't even started. All right, so.
You are about to experience trash cinema.
Oh, my God.
Thank you.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Trash Tapes. One man's trash is another man's treasure. And this is a very, very special episode because it's Batman Month. And with that, we've got an extra guest here. So, first of all, let me just introduce you to everyone. You already know him already. He's my victim. Ed, hi.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
And are you good? You good?
I'm very well, thank you.
Sweet. And then, obviously, myself, I'm Johan Chapul, I'm the Inflictor of Pain, and I actually now got a third person on this couch. It's surprisingly uncomfortable. We're really crunched and quite together now in this very tiny couch. And that is Sophie Black. Hello!
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yay! Good on you. So, there's a particular reason why we got you on the show. Because, obviously, it's Batman Month.
Yes.
So, you want to explain to clear all the listeners, why are you suddenly a Batman expert and why are you on my couch?
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily an expert. I've obviously been a lifelong fan, as we all have.
Yeah.
But, in particular, I'm here because I recently directed a Poison Ivy fan film.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Can you give me...
Why are you suddenly Little John?
I just want to do some yips in the background.
Of course you do. So I want to ask then, what made you want to start that project? I'm intrigued.
Well, I mean, I've always loved Poison Ivy when I was a little girl. I used to watch her in the animated series and just think, this woman is amazing. She's, you know, she's strong, she's powerful, she's very sexy, but she owns her strength and she owns her sexiness and she cares about the planet. And, you know, she's got a lot of good intentions behind her actions. And seeing a character like that as a little girl was really empowering. I know she was a villain, but not really, you know. She's had a lot of good motivations behind what she did.
Yeah.
So I've always loved her. Even as a little kid, I bought all the toys and I spray painted my hair orange because I loved her so much. I stole my dad's face paint kit and sprayed my hair orange with this hairspray.
That's kind of amazing.
Not actual spray paint.
It was designed for, like, my dad used to do, like, face painting at parties.
Right.
He had orange and black hairspray in order to do tigers for people so he could paint the face and do the entire hair.
Nice.
And I just emptied his entire can of orange on my hair because I wanted to be Poison Ivy so much. And, well, growing up and becoming a filmmaker, I think it was always in the back of my mind where everyone thinks, if I could do a superhero movie, which superhero would I do? Everyone who's a filmmaker, kind of, I'm sure, has had that thought at some point.
Yeah.
And I've always thought, if it was me, it would definitely be Poison Ivy. I've always loved her. I love other superheroes, but not as much as I've loved her. And and then we've not really seen her in cinema.
Well, we'll
get on to that.
This is the reason why. There's a particular reason why I got you on.
Yes.
Because obviously this is the Trash Tapes, and you've heard some episodes and some of our videos and stuff like that, so you know what we do.
Yes.
We purposely go out there, find terrible movies to review.
Yeah.
So, it being Batman Month, and you being a fan of Poison Ivy, there is one depiction of Poison Ivy.
In cinema.
And that is... of the movie we're going to be talking about today, Batman and Robin.
Yes.
My name is Freeze. Learn it well, for it's the chilling sound of your doom.
This is the way the world could end.
Please, show some mercy.
With ice. With a kiss.
With venom. I probably should have mentioned this. I'm poison.
Poison Ivy.
And the only man who can stop them.
I Freeze. I'm Batman.
Can't do it alone.
Batman will watch his beloved Gotham perish.
Bundle up, boys. There's a storm coming.
Heroes! It's a hockey team from hell!
Cool party!
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
All right, everyone, chill!
George Clooney.
Julie, I'm not the marrying kind.
I know you've had your wild nights.
Good night. Wild doesn't quite cover it.
Chris O'Donnell.
I want a car. Chicks dig the car.
This is why Superman works alone.
Uma Thurman.
So many people to kill. So little time.
Alicia Silverstone.
And you are?
Batgirl.
That's not awfully PC. What about Batperson?
found the Batcave.
She knows who we are.
Guess we'll just have to kill her.
Yep.
In a Joel Schumacher film. Strength and courage.
Partners.
Honor.
Partners.
And loyalty.
Partners.
It all comes together.
We're going to need a bigger cave.
Batman and Robin.
So, Batman and Robin. So everyone, let's all share about this first of all. What's our history with this movie?
I saw it in the cinema. I don't even know, this might even be my first time seeing Poison Ivy. It's all kind of mixed up from being a 90s child. Yeah. But I definitely bought all the toys, all the little Kenner action figures that you could get, which looked nothing like the characters in the film. There were these very sort of cheap, plasticky things.
Let's be honest now. Was it, when you were spraying your hair orange, was it because of Uma Thurman? Not of the animated series?
If you look at Uma Thurman, her hair is not orange, which
so
we will come on to her appearance, I think, but
it's so red.
Absolutely, yeah. So watching it in the cinemas, loving it. I loved Robin as well. I thought he was really cool.
Such a hunk.
I know. Had a Mr. Freeze action figure with a little gun that like squirted ice, and I loved it. And my little nephew plays with them now, which is really cute. So.
See, you're passing down the trashy love to the next generation.
Yeah, and he loves them, and he loves superheroes.
So, yeah. Just don't pass down the bat nipples.
Oh, we're going to get into that later. Ed, what's your history with this movie?
I don't think I saw it at the cinema. I think I remember seeing it on TV, like, all the time.
Okay.
And I always kind of caught it when it was kind of just, it already started. It's a long movie, and when you're a kid, you don't really like watching films that are, like, over 2 hours or 2 hours. So yeah. I think I just kind of dipped in and out when it was on TV a lot. So, I may have seen it in the cinema, but I don't remember my cinema viewing. I just remember seeing it on TV all the time.
It was epic in the cinema. Mm. It was epic. As a little kid, it was so epic.
It's brilliant. Kind of weird looking back at it now, like we're watching on a tiny screen, and you're thinking to yourself, like, when you were six,
yeah.
And you 6 or 10 or whatever this was, and you're watching that, and you're thinking, my God, this is so amazing. If you were like a 10-year-old,
awesome. The colours, all the action, all the sound. And everything's so brightly coloured, and it's a joyride for a child.
And then watching it now, especially now, when you listen to our commentary, you'll sense that not really doesn't hold up that well.
Still amazing. What are you talking about?
So, my history with the movie is I never saw it in the cinema. I don't think I ever saw it in the cinema. I got it on VHS because my parents bought all the Batman movies on VHS. I was introduced through watching my folks watching the first Batman on tape. And so I just watched it all on tape. And I used to also watch the animated series. I had the videos for the animated series as well. And I remember things like Poison Ivy and Riddler and all that done well.
Yes.
And when you're a kid and you see like Batman Forever and Batman and Robin, you're thinking, oh my God, these characters are here.
Yeah.
Then you grow older. And the nostalgia fades away.
Well, the animated series holds up.
Still holds
completely
up.
Completely holds up. It's beautiful. It's really well done. The characters are probably the best they've been, particularly like people like the Joker.
Story-wise, amazing.
Yeah, it's adult stuff. There's gangsters and drug-taking and everything. They don't simplify anything. It's slow-paced. It's moody. It's often snowing. It looks beautiful.
Beautiful.
And then you get this.
And then you get this.
Do you think there's people, though, that this was their first encounter with Batman?
Very likely, this is how they thought
Batman movies should be.
Imagine if you were a kid and this was your first Batman movie. Of course you'd think. Then you look at Tim Burton's Batman, you're thinking, well, wait a minute.
I think this was my first Batman movie.
It must have been.
Yeah.
It must have been for everybody.
So until you saw the other ones, you're thinking, this is Batman. This is a movie of Batman and this is how it's going to be.
You can't tell the difference when you're a kid. I think I saw that and then I saw Forever. I know that the second one, was it Batman Returns?
Yeah.
Terrified me. Terrified me as a child.
Yeah, because obviously, because the penguin is not his weird bird.
No, it's because the soft toys get it. I couldn't watch that scene. I was terrified.
Oh no! The horror!
When they go down the sink. Oh.
I think the best thing to do is to talk a little bit about the history of how this movie came to be.
For those of you who don't know.
Exactly. There's a lot here, actually. So it's a little bit of a history lesson. Is everyone ready? Get down, get on your desk, get your pencils ready. We're going to go in for a bit of a ride. So, First of all, we have to start all the way back in what is now the 30s. We're recording this roughly around the 30th anniversary of the Tim Burton's 1989 Batman, right? Yeah. This movie had also had a little bit of bumps, when it's trying to make them, but it got made, and it's still an iconic movie. Do you call it a 100% a Batman movie? Yeah. But it's still really flipping good. Now, this, obviously, because of that, they need the sequel. So then Batman Returns happened. But what they did was, the studio allowed Tim Burton full creative control. Obviously, by allowing this crazy goth kid, basically, to have full creative control over Batman, weird things happened, which could not be marketed, basically.
Yep.
So, you know, you've got Michelle Pfeiffer in a sexy cat suit, and this penguin, though not the penguins, but he's this horrible bird monster, basically. You can't really sell that to kids.
Scary.
No. It's terrifying.
Terrifying.
Thing is, the first one was successful. Yes, it was adult, but it was still marketable. Yeah. Mm. So this is what happened. The studio eventually then dropped Tim Burton for the third movie, right? But he stayed along as a producer.
Yeah.
Then came Joel Schumacher. Joel Schumacher is probably the villain of this entire franchise. He was punned on to have this sort of add his own spin on things because the studio now wanted Batman needs to be more family friendly and more marketable.
Yeah.
But Tim Burton was producer at the time, so that's why Batman Forever has a little bit of edge. So it has a little bit. I'm saying like it's not
Jim Carrey in like a cat suit.
It's not a sharp edge. It's not like a katana edge.
But Tim Burton's overseeing it.
Yes, it's got a tone to it. Yeah.
It felt kind of in the wheelhouse.
Music
right?
was still Danny Elfman, was it?
Yes, it was around that time.
Yeah.
So you can see how there was still something there, but it wasn't entirely that it's changed and so on. Obviously, the Batman then changed at the same time. It wasn't no longer Michael Keaton, it was Val Kilmer. Now,
who isn't actually too bad?
No, I like Val Kilmer.
Ooh, okay.
I'm a huge Willow fan, so I'm going to stick up for him.
Yeah, he's not as bad as people say.
No. The thing is, as an actor, he's great. Yeah. I don't actually see he has anything wrong as an actor. But this is where it leads to a couple of little situations here, right? So, so the success of Batman Forever, right? The studio immediately wanted to commission a sequel, right? They hired Joel Schumacher again. To reprise a role and get everything else sorted. And they want to get everyone back, including Val Kilmer. But Val Kilmer decided to say no to it. Now, the reason why is because he was doing The Saint at the same time and decided to do that instead.
Oh, no.
I know.
I'm not sure which is worse.
I know. Bad choice. But also, Joel Schumacher also claims that he fired him because, and I quote, Val Kilmer was actually incredibly difficult to work with on set. Joel Schumacher said, he sort of quit, but we also sort of fired him.
Yeah.
So, basically, he was a bit of a dick. Joel Schumacher later said that...
He was Jim Morrison. He's probably still being, like, Jim Morrison.
A little bit high on drugs, being a bit of a prick, right? But then, this is the thing. Val Kilmer later wanted to... He left the movie as well, not just to do The Saint, because it was a thing, but he also wanted to leave because he wanted to work on another bad movie, The Island of Dr. Moreau, starring Marlon Brando.
Oh, no.
So basically, he left a terrible movie for two bad movies.
Mm. Yeah, increasingly worse by the movie.
Pretty bad, isn't it? So by that point, they say, oh, what we're going to do? You get George Clooney, who was of not only...
Well, he was a big name at the time, so I suppose it's an obvious choice, isn't it? It's weird that it's an obvious choice, but...
Yeah. Seeing is as well, like, so they got George Clooney involved because George Clooney was he was trying to push himself out of television because he was doing ER at the time, wasn't he?
Yes.
So he wanted to do more lead roles. And what, to be honest, what big jumping platform to be a lead role than being Batman?
Mm.
So of course he jumped to it. I don't think he was entirely grateful for what he did afterwards, though.
No.
He actually claimed that nowadays he actually apologises for making the movie.
Yeah.
He apologises. He actually goes around and he says that if anyone actually saw it in the cinema, that he will very happily refund them.
Oh, yeah, he owes me some money then.
He makes a big joke about it now. He's like that he hates the movie and he regrets it and stuff like that.
I think that makes him look worse.
Yeah, because you have to sort of like own up to it.
When cast enjoy being in the film, you know, and then you get George just sulking through it.
Because that basically just makes him look like he's just a cash-in movie.
Yeah,
and he's
absolutely.
Just like, oh yeah, I just took the money.
they're still trying to cast everybody else, and they were able to write in a few characters. Obviously, Poison Ivy's one, which we'll get to a little later on. But then we also got Mr. Freeze. Now, the reason why Mr. Freeze happened is because, and I quote, Joe Schumacher actually was he's a big fan of the animated series, and saw the episode A Heart of Ice.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful episode.
And that is the one which is the backstory for Mr. Freeze. Yes. So,
yeah.
He said, I want that. So they did that. Now, there were actually multiple people who was actually going to be up for Mr. Freeze. Do you want me to give you a list of who they
were? Yes, please. I want to know how he got from A to B, looking at that beautiful episode about the little geeky scientist.
Okay, so they were...
How did he get from A to Arnold?
A to Arnold! I have no idea.
Now, okay, so here's the thing. Right, so they were... Before,
yep.
Right, they had Ed Harris to possibly be Mr. Freeze.
Interesting. Yeah, that'd be good.
That would have been good. But then he dropped out for due to commitments, right? This one's going to be a shocker, and you'll love this. Patrick Stewart.
Oh, I mean, I can't see it, but I love him.
There would have been Patrick Stewart
as
being
Mr. Freeze.
Well, he would have been more like...
Walked past me once. It was just the most amazing experience. And I was taking photos of a theatre set at the time, and I didn't even know he was there. And he just walked past me and went, excuse me, in his Make It So voice. And I was doing this fish impression with my camera out. My camera's out and it was on, and I just couldn't speak for about an hour afterwards. I didn't take a photo because I couldn't move. I just, yeah.
Oh my God.
If you're just not expecting Patrick Stewart to be in a room and then suddenly he's in a room, it's quite a shocking experience. And
I mean,
possibly one of the best moments of my life.
Oh, brilliant. It's Patrick Stewart would be like more like how Mr. Freeze should be, like a scientist.
You're saying that because he's bald.
No, I'm just saying that because of how he performs roles.
But Ed Harris, I would have loved that. He's so geeky.
But either of those two would have been more accurate. But the thing is, Arnold is just comedy gold.
So here's the thing. Now, this is how it got to Arnold, right? So Patrick Stewart and Ed Harris were all considered, but they all dropped out due to several commitment issues. But then the script was rewritten to accommodate Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was genuinely interested. Now, the reason why Joel Schumacher decided that Mr. Freed must have been big and strong, like he was chiseled out of a glacier, end quote. And the reason why is because, obviously, or because of the famous Mr. Freeze suit. Because they couldn't put a skinny man in a giant suit. So instead, get a big man in a slightly tighter suit.
Mm. But they did in the cartoon. He was always a skinny man. The suit made him powerful. He wasn't RoboCop, you know, and now he is RoboCop.
But this is RoboCop in spandex now.
Yes. So Light up RoboCop in spandex with a machine gun.
Kind of sexy. The way you describe it is like, oh, wait a minute.
I love Arnold. I absolutely love Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
Obviously, the fans were disappointed to a point, yeah, but it was surprisingly successful because of its toyification.
Yeah. I was part of that. There you go. You are welcome, Mr. Schumacher. Well, I bought all your crap.
All the Kenner toys.
I bought them all.
are some of them still in the house? Are some of them here?
No, they're at my parents, so that my little nephew can play with them. But I've got one of Poison Ivy's vines. So
there you go.
There were so many different kinds of Batman.
Yeah,
Batman.
There was one. It was like bright orange, I think, a bright orange Batman suit.
Suits looked epic on them.
There was a gold
clothes.
Batman as well. Yeah. A gold Batman.
You get two Robins. You can get blue and silver, which is one that I had, or you could get like a red and black one, which looked really epic. So
yeah,
now, here's, so weird.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like Batman as a character as a whole is he's almost gone to the point where he's almost like Sherlock Holmes. You can put him in anything. And it makes kind of semi-sense.
Yes.
Semi-sense, right? We're not so don't go bananas, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's an anime on Netflix recently. I think there's one on Netflix where it's like part anime, part like CGI, and it's about where Batman goes to feudal Japan.
Batman Ninja.
Yes.
Oh my word.
Now that is special.
On paper seemed like the best film ever made. Mm. Ever made.
I was so angry watching that.
Giant monkey versus giant Batman. No, the monkeys made giant Batman through the magic of flute.
It was weird with the bats. That was so weird.
And it was like Power Rangers because they all had the moving castles. That became
the fighting
and...
castles. It annoyed me. It's like it's too much of a big, massive distraction.
I think Gorilla Grodd just needs to stay in DC Fast.
Just
not
be
in things. It was, no monkeys, please.
On average, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's got around about 10% on Rotten Tomatoes. With an average grade of about 3.6 out of 10.
Was that adults or kids? Because if kids were voting for it, I think it'd do
that's
much better.
That's going to be film critics.
Yeah. That's film critics going, yes.
I mean, you can tell it's aimed at kids. It's going 10 to the dozen. It's scene. There's no slow plot moments from the very moment the film starts.
Well, that's why they got Joel in.
Yeah, from the very moment the film starts, you've got major action and Mr. Freeze is there straight away. It's exciting. You know, there's a lot of explosions and colour and it's, you know, kids love it.
But the problem was because it was so critically panned, the studio decided to actually put a pin on it and not do the next movie after that. The loads of things actually got cancelled because of it. So there were planned sequels for this. Do you want to tell me what
somebody... I would love to know what we could have seen.
All right, let me give you some of these because, oh my sweet Jesus. Okay, so there was Joel Schumacher had several meetings with Warner Brothers to talk about trying to convince them to make another Batman movie afterwards. Okay, there were three of them already in the pipeline as an idea. One is they wanted to, that Joel Schumacher actually wanted to take it to his darker route by making Batman Year One.
Ooh.
Right.
Great comic. Joel Schumacher treatment might have not been so good.
No, I have. But the thing was, he was going to cast Kurt Russell as a young Commissioner Gordon and Selina Kyle being played by an African-American woman living in the ghetto.
It wouldn't be the first time.
No, it wouldn't be the first time.
I mean, Eartha Kitt?
Yes, it was Eartha Kitt. I mean, that might have been okay.
Yeah. Now, there's the thing, though. So Warner Brothers decided not to rehire Schumacher because of what happened with Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Which was a bit... because... they say, like, what happened to it? And the reason why, because the pressure of the studio said we'd make it more child-friendly, of course it went to the direction of the 1960s campy Batman.
Yes. Yeah. Which we all loved.
In its own bubble.
Yes,
not
from
when,
its own time.
Not when, in a weird way, it's supposed to link the continuity to the first Tim Burton's Batman.
Mm. Yes.
You see where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
So if it was its own entity, we would have loved it. Okay? Another one was interesting, was going to be a direct sequel. Right, which was going to be called Batman Unchained, and it was going to be a direct sequel starring
Unchained.
Right, it was going to be a direct sequel having all the cast back, and you're going to have. Do you want to know who the villains were going to be?
Okay.
Yes, please.
Scarecrow.
Oh.
And Harley Quinn.
Oh, that would have been nice.
Joel Schumacher's version of Harley Quinn.
If it's anything like his version of Poison Ivy, I think we would have had plenty of popcorn for you. I don't know, it might have been interesting. I assume her hammer would have made an appearance and it would have been huge.
Yes.
This is quite funny.
She's sparkly.
Yeah.
When I was in school and after Batman and Robin happened and everyone was waiting around for another Batman film, a friend at school, I think he just made it up, but he said... he'd heard that there's another Batman movie, and the title was called Batman Triumphant.
No! There is a sequel to that! That one is called! Hold on.
Really?
The next one was going to be a spin-off movie.
He was right. Your friend was right.
Your friend was right.
Oh, my God.
Your friend was right. It was actually going to be called Batman Triumphant. And it's the movie that was going to be the spin-off movie where Robin becomes Nightwing.
Right.
Which we haven't really seen.
So he must have read that in a magazine or something, but we just made fun of him.
But the reason why...
You owe your friend an apology. You
apologise to your friend right now.
Yeah,
go close to the mic.
Come on.
I don't know. I can't remember his name. He was just some guy in school.
To Edward's friend in school.
Say sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yay!
I'll tell you who will know. If Rob Halls is listening,
he will know
what I mean by Batman Triumphant.
Okay.
Your friend was right.
There you go. So there was in the pipeline. It was going to be a spin-off movie.
Similar pie plan, pictured here.
Okay, another thing that was cancelled because of this was Tim Burton's Superman movie.
Oh,
the death of Superman lives. I met the producer.
Yeah.
Holly Payne, she's wonderful. And the person who produced, the documentary.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to... The Death of Superman Lives, the documentary. And she and her husband went all round and interviewed everyone.
Yeah.
About what happened.
It's a great documentary.
I met her at the start of this year and she's brilliant. And, it's a fascinating story, that one.
And would you have actually wanted to see that, though? I think it would have been the balmiest superhero movie of all time.
I mean, Nick Cage was like at the height of his fame, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was a selling star. It was fine.
Because I think he just finished off doing Face Off around the time.
Yeah.
Oh. I would have loved it.
We all would have gone and seen it. We know that. We would have spent money on it. We know that much.
Yeah.
You know.
So, yeah.
This was before. This would have been before Nicolas Cage was it like a meme, you know, like a comedy character.
Yeah.
Because when I watched Face Off, I took him seriously. I thought he was brilliant.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been great.
Oh, my God, he did Leaving Las Vegas. That's amazeballs.
Yeah.
You know. So, that is how we got to here. Now, this movie, as over time, I think it's because of all the kids who watched it, who go back looking at it with, you know, rose-tinted glasses and say, this movie's actually amazing, why is no one going back to Batman and Robin?
Yeah. It was my favourite Batman film.
It was, and I bet, and for me as a kid, I loved watching it on tape over and over again.
Yeah.
Because you never think when you're about 8 or 9 years old that you're thinking, this is a bad movie.
It comes on TV, it's all grainy, and you just sit and watch it on a Sunday afternoon, and it's lovely.
It's bright, it's shiny, it's childish, it's crazy. Yeah. You know,
you know where you stand.
Exactly.
You know exactly what you're going to get. Comfort food.
Perfect. This is like proper like comfort food. This is like when you go and you say, you know what, I'm gonna go to takeout, get a greasy portion of chips and just eat that.
Yeah.
That would have
the order I know I like, I'm ordering it again.
Isn't it kind of sweet as well as a kid? You're not judgmental with films.
No,
you just kind of watch them, and as long as something exciting's happening, you kind of think it's brilliant. You don't like think, oh, that's poorly done, or the acting's really bad, or whatever. You don't see that stuff.
Even the poster, if you look at it, it's on the DVD there.
Yeah.
It's full of people. It's even the cover's overcrowded, the poster bit. As a kid, you think, oh, even more people.
Look at all these people.
I can go see all of those people.
Faces.
Loads of faces, colours, and
especially if you recognise one of them.
Yes.
Because, you know,
from the animated series. You know?
Yes, if you're, oh, there's Batman, there's Mr. Freeze, if you remember from the animated series. Or if you watch other movies and you're getting a little savvy, like I recognise who Arnold Schwarzenegger was. I'm going, oh my God, that's Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's playing Mr. Freeze, my favourite. Let's go. And then, obviously, you watch it, and then, you know, as you get older, you realise, oh, this is a piece of dirt. But it's a bit. But I'd argue it's a bit polished.
Let's have a look at the cover again.
See,
Arnie is the central piece.
Yeah.
He is the big name
in
this movie.
He's top billed.
Yeah.
He's actually the only time in all of the Batman movies where the villain was top billing.
That's what I found really strange watching this film, is how little Batman's in it. He has like a big saving moment at the end where he saves a couple of people. I'm sure we'll go on to them because they were amazing.
Mm.
But a lot of the time he's just skulking in very boring outfits in the background. He's hardly in it. He's so 90s. He looks halfway between Ross Geller and Pacey from Dawson's Creek.
Yes.
He has that haircut, polo necks, and he's not even dressed smartly at any point like Bruce Wayne should be. He's like an extra in his own movie. He's just skulking in the background looking fed up.
He's in like bat
film.
Robes.
Bat robes and just black, boring clothing. And he's barely, it's all about Robin being young and cool, and it's about Mr. Freeze.
Before we actually break down the plot and some of our best bits of the movie, one final factoid before we go in.
Fantastic.
Okay, so there was quite a few people lined up, obviously, once Val Kilmer dropped out to being Bruce Wayne. This one surprised me.
Is it Patrick Stewart?
No.
Oh.
Do you know who's going to be Bruce Wayne?
No.
David Duchovny.
Yes!
You would pay to see that.
I would love
that. Him.
David Duchovny was going to play that, because because he was this was a point where he was doing X-Files.
He was so big.
He was the biggest thing on TV. He was bigger than ER, you know. So basically the thing, oh, we need someone else, let's grab David Duchovny. He couldn't do it. So George Clooney, who now is like the biggest movie star of all time, was basically second choice to David Duchovny.
And he looks like he knows it, and he's skulking, and he's not even bothered.
David Duchovny would have been better.
Yes.
Probably
anyone would have been better than someone who doesn't want
to
be there.
Was also reconsidered to play Bruce Wayne when Batman Begins was going to come round.
What?
Yeah.
David Duchovny.
Yeah. So instead of Christian Bale, we could have had David Duchovny in Batman Begins. Wow.
He's so brooding, though, isn't he, David Duchovny?
Which is why he's perfect, kind of.
Well, I mean, Christian Bale did a great job with that.
He did a great job.
And Robert Pattinson boy can brood.
Well, so here's the thing. I'm actually quite eager for Rob Pattinson.
So am I. I think he's earned it.
I think, you know what? This is clearly doing, like, Batman, not year one, but Batman, like, the early years.
Although we all are slightly off tangent, but anyone else sick of the origin story of Batman?
Yes.
We know how he became Batman. We've seen it a million times.
Can we have the next Batman movie, which is just going to be called The Batman, right?
Yeah.
Can it just be Batman doing the detective stuff and the cool stuff? Can we not have, knowing how his parents
died? You know there's going to be a montage of him as a kid seeing them get shot.
We have seen the death scene multiple times.
Yeah.
And we haven't even... We're talking about the movie as we're going for anyway, but we're reminded about these things constantly, especially in Batman and Robin, because we have the weird flashback sequences with Alfred.
The fact that it's a fourth film and we're still seeing, remember how you were orphaned? Remember that, Batman? And we're still seeing it over and over again.
Isn't there a sequence where George Clooney is looking like just mopey and he's staring at the window, and then suddenly you just see a horrible crossfade of young Bruce Wayne and younger Alfred going over, you know, Wayne.
Bedtime story.
Yeah. And then you've got the bedtime story scene, you've got the bit with
him looking at a grave, but graveyard. It looks like he's in his garden.
Well, he's like, what the hell, man?
Is he in his garden? I can't make it out. It's really weird.
It's garbage. I'm sick. I have to admit, we're very sick and tired of the Batman origin story. We know this.
It's a great origin story, but we know what it is.
Same thing goes with something like Spider-Man. We know how Spider-Man got his powers. We do not need to see how Spider-Man got his powers. We don't need to know about Uncle Ben. We know this.
That's my one reservation with the new Batman film. I was a bit like, oh, I like the casting. I don't want another origin story.
I mean, I'd like an old Batman, but I think Batman versus Superman's meant to be the old Batman.
That's the thing. Ben Affleck was supposed to be the older Batman.
Mm. Now, what's his real name nowadays?
Batfleck,
yes.
Poor Batfleck. No, actually, Sad Fleck, because have you seen the meme of him when he's sad?
Sad Batman. That is actually part of my daily vocabulary now. Sad, if something's a bit sad, I get a bit sad Batman, isn't it? And it's actually become part of my vocabulary.
My favourite one was where the barbecue. He's got an apron on and everything.
What about the log flume? Isn't it a log flume? Like, well, I'm not enjoying this.
Let's go back to this, because I want to read the back of the DVD box. So I can explain to everyone what exactly the plot is. Because, to be frank, I think this movie doesn't need a point-by-point breakdown of the entire plot. Because, to be honest, this whole movie is basically a combination of just scenes.
Yeah, which is why it appealed to kids.
Yeah, because it's just like, oh, here's a cool thing now.
There's some thin bits of plot about diamonds.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Break out the bat synopsis.
Let's break it out. So, I'm going to read exactly what it says at the back of the DVD case.
God.
Chills and frills. It already starts on an ice pun, ladies and gentlemen.
We'll get on to that.
No, actually, hold up. Chills and thrills. Will Gotham City be put on ice?
Oh, my.
George Clooney is Batman as the Dark Knight battles his greatest threat yet. Cold-hearted Mr. Freeze, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And venomous Poison Ivy, played by Uma Thurman. Right, Batman has more than Gotham City to protect. The youthful eagerness of crime-fighting comrades Robin, played by Chris O'Donnell, and Batgirl, introduced and played by Alicia Silverstone. So,
did they actually introduce Alicia Silverstone?
No, it doesn't say that. It's just in brackets, but basically,
I was going to say she's in Batman Forever, isn't she? No, she isn't.
She isn't.
I keep getting mixed up all the time.
Oh dear.
Okay, so the young, youthful eagerness of his crime-fighting comrades puts them frequently in harm's way, which is true, because these two are actually kind of dumb and put themselves in danger all the time.
All three of them are dumb.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
New, very special effects include a wild... Yes. Yes, the CGI, the special effects. Okay. New, very special effects. Include a wild sky surfing sequence. Oh, we're going to get to that.
Which is in, like, the first 2 minutes of the film. It's ridiculous.
And Mr. Freeze's outrageous ice-blasting arsenal. Yeah, the ice. It's state-of-the-art excitement from our bat family to yours.
Oh, that's... You know, immediately you know that's a comforting sentiment right there.
It's
from
a family
our
movie.
Bat family to you, yeah.
It's a family movie. Yeah. But this is the thing, though. I think the reason why most people, some fans who are the older fans and some of the critics were annoyed at this movie is because if this is supposed to be continuity from Tim Burton's darker...
Yeah.
Well, especially, try and compare this movie to Batman Returns.
Yeah.
totally different kettle of fish.
I'm glad you told me, like, that it was still trying to be part of the whole Tim Burton aesthetic, but you've got the family-friendly appeal, because the look of the film is so messed up in terms of it's kind of dark.
But it isn't.
But really colourful. At the same time, and it's like these two, like, aesthetics have kind of, like, had a big battle and collided in the middle and, like, exploded all over the set, and that's kind of, like, extremely colourful but extremely dark.
And this pretty much sums up the first opening fight scene.
Yes.
Where we get, where we're first introduced to Mr. Freeze right off the bat, and he comes up with all the ice puns. Now, can I just give you one little quick factoid, as we say? Do you know how many, exactly, how many ice puns were mentioned in this
movie? Please tell me you've got it written down. There were so many.
There's a number here.
Okay.
Do you know how many? 27.
My birthday. My birthday. I'm so proud.
27 ice puns.
27 ice puns.
Great.
The Iceman cometh.
Please, show some mercy.
Mercy? I'm afraid that my condition has left me cold to your pleas of mercy. No! Oh. In this universe, there's only one absolute. Everything freezes.
I freeze. I'm Batman.
So, Arnold Schwarzenegger just appears like a beast and is stealing the diamond.
Like an Adonis.
Yeah, like a god.
Yeah, muscly and, you know, shiny, and it's weird.
I love it. I mean,
and strong.
He comes in big and buff and tries to steal this one giant diamond. And at the same time, before all this, you have like Batman and Robin trying to like get dressed. And we have to mention this. Okay, yes. So
are we going there now? Is it happening?
Let's talk about the costume.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about the costume, Sophie?
You start with that montage.
Right. So the montage starts off. And this, we're literally how we're first introduced to Batman and Robin is literally in a in sort of an outfit montage, but we're introduced almost butt first and
it's
chest
like,
first.
It reminds me of like Edgar Wright, like crash zooms, you know?
It's
kind of tooled up crash zooms,
but
isn't
he
it?
Does them to mock the use of crash zooms for funny. These were serious crash zooms.
I don't know
whether crotches.
I don't think the movie is serious,
but it's serious in the context of, I want to show you this in an epic way.
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Like this whole dressing up montage was introduced in Batman Forever with Val Kilmer, which is an interesting fact about that one, right? just let me throw this. When George Clooney was going to get on the Batsuit, they had to readjust the old Batsuit because Val Kilmer was too big.
Of course he was.
He was ginormous.
He was
in terms
a proper
of
Bruce Wayne. He was muscly and big. And
not that department.
You're talking about,
oh my word.
He was massive.
I did not know you meant that.
Oh, I meant that. Apparently Val Kilmer is ginormous downstairs. So that means, but the funny thing, this explains a little bit about George Clooney, because it was too big to the point that they had to readjust the suit to fit his size.
What's funny is throughout
But
throughout the film, they are making cock jokes.
All the time.
Subtle penis jokes. The whole time, it's about masculinity and everyone's got fake muscles on. And then, like, there's a scene where, for some reason, Mr. Freeze and Bane are in a car. For some reason.
I love it!
And he says to him, like,
Bane's a chauffeur, isn't he?
Throughout, but we'll get, and, like, and Mr. Freeze says to Bane, "You see, Bane, I told you, it's not the size of the gun that matters, it's what you do with it."
It's all innuendo.
Constant, but it's subtle. It's enough to be in a family film, but it's all about fragile masculinity. Is that why George Clooney looks so annoyed the whole time?
Maybe partly.
Zooming in, crash zooming on his crotch that had to be taken in.
Yeah.
On the subject of, like, bodies.
Yeah.
Joel Schumacher is clearly so obsessed with the human body.
Yeah.
That it's not just the montages of, obviously, we haven't mentioned bat nipples, which is the detail in the costume that sank the series.
Yeah.
But he's so obsessed with the human body and shots of bodies and hands and jokes about penises and everyone in very muscly suits, from the bat suits to Mr. Freeze. It goes beyond that. It spills out onto the street.
Yeah.
The set dressing is full throughout of bodies and hands and heads, and even the big showdown takes place on this giant human statue.
His observatory,
Yeah, and his obsession with the human body spills out into everything you see on scene.
It's really bizarre, isn't it?
It's so strange.
And it's almost as if it's like he's trying to frame. He's framing them lovingly, but almost, but it's lovingly, but not like it. Let's compare this slightly. It's not like someone like Michael Bay who's doing it. Hey, look at that butt. Look at those boobs. Yeah, it's all like, look at them. Aren't they gorgeous?
It's like he's curating a museum of statues.
Yes.
A little bit, and he wants to keep seeing these statues
like,
on set.
Everyone's like a Greek god.
Everyone is. And they're all beautiful, but it's on the street.
Yeah.
There's that bizarre scene with terrible CGI when all the cars and the bikes...
On the giant hand!
Yeah, riding down this luscious, muscly arm that's bronzed. And it's very strange.
Now, if you link that together with Arnold Schwarzenegger, do you think that maybe he's just a big fan of big buff men?
I think he is. But like also women, but that was a little bit more...
But just bodies in general.
But yeah,
the human form.
The face was very obvious. A lot of close-ups of eyes. And a lot of like, you know, shots of faces and the cow eyes and Mr. Freeze's eyes, and then all along the gritty, graffiti-laden streets, you've got these big stone heads, like the trolls in The Hobbit. You know,
what a comparison!
I know it doesn't deserve that comparison to Tolkien, but you know, there's these like heads poking through the shops.
It's really interesting how it shows here, because this is the combination of Joel Schumacher's taste combined with Tim Burton's aesthetic that was established for Gotham, which I still think is the best look of any city ever, because it's like a weird combination of like it has the 80s vibe, it's got the 50s like 50s sort of vibe, it's got
and the
coolness,
40s film noir
well. And gothic, like almost some of them are like the size of castles, which we mentioned how Arkham Asylum is basically a castle.
And so is the lab where Poison Ivy and Dr. Woodrue are working.
Yeah, it's
that's
a
weird castle lab as well. Yeah.
So yeah, it's like a melding of two different aesthetics.
With a family look.
With
colours to appeal to kids.
I think the 1940s kind of stuff was lost after the first movie.
It's all 90s, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love how Batman introduced himself, because so. Pans, they're deadpan. It's like, hi, Mr. Freeze, I'm Batman. He literally just says it like that, and then slides down a dinosaur. And then from that, then Robin drives in on his motorcycle, which looks kind of slick, not gonna lie, and goes through a wall and leaves a bat logo in the wall. Like,
well, a Robin logo.
Robin logo.
Yeah.
But there's no reason for the Robin logo, is there?
No.
Flaming Robin logo in the back. And then they all start doing these massive martial arts style acrobatics where they're leaping and spinning through the air and the gun.
Yes.
The bit with the gun.
Magnetised.
Lands perfectly for no reason on top of the thing, and the only reason we find out later it's landed so perfectly and so neatly is because Mr. Freeze gets to throw a dude at it.
Yes.
To make it come down again. I mean, that sets the tone. That's scene two.
Yeah, yes. Can we officially say that this movie's got a surprising amount of wire work? Like, more so than I ever thought
a
Batman movie should be.
To the people that had to take the wires out, you guys.
It's like crouching Batman
job.
Hidden Robin kind of thing.
Very nice,
Well done. So this then leads to a chase sequence that involves a rocket, and it was ridiculous. Now here's an interesting, I'm going to throw another factoid at you. Okay, so when Mr. Freeze and Batman are in the rocket, George Clooney's limping. The reason why is, and I quote, he actually dislocated his knee, not from the scene, because
hatred of the film.
No. Because the rocket scene was actually one of the first scenes shot. Okay, before then he hurt his knee while playing baseball, because the man's an idiot. And so for the first 2 weeks he was actually secretly in a leg cast.
Oh my god, that's, how did they get around?
Backcast.
Backcast.
He was in a backcast. So he was limping for at least a quarter of the movie in the bat suit.
But how did he do the surfing through air, Johan?
I don't know. I don't know. Because after this, it's hilarious because Robin is holding onto the rocket, breaks in, and then Mr. Freeze says several ice puns, jumps out the rocket.
Robin climbs up the rocket like an Adam West-style green screen moment. Robin!
And then it is the best bit where you mentioned. The doors blow out and they're surfing the doors with sky surfing. But remember, Mr. Freeze jumps out backwards and has beautiful butterfly wings.
I forgot about that. It's like In Your Face, Mothra. Here's Arnold Schwarzenegger as a beautiful butterfly.
Why does he look so elegant?
So beautiful and dainty. But he looks so dainty, he's so huge! Adonis body and his pretty little wings. It just makes no sense.
And then the whole sequence is this chase scene which leads to Robin being frozen. I love it. It's like, Three's Bird Boy. And then, yes.
The window.
Yes, it gets to this point. He freezes up a wall to make an ice window, and then literally he's wiping it. He's wiping the window, going, "Aha,
bye, see you later."
Because we can't laugh because this was Batman's first moral dilemma. Do you unfreeze your bird friend, or do you chase after the villain?
Which starts one of a couple of minor plots in the film of can Batman learn to trust Robin? And by the end of it, we don't know.
We don't know.
That is never really. There's no end to that story. It's a bit of a debate, but then they forget about it when Batman.
No. They do kind of solve it, but that's because they both realize that Uma Thurman, aka Poison Ivy, is a bit of a bitch.
Because most of the time it's about their love for
Poison Ivy.
Yeah, fake love.
But they forget about the trust. Like, he even turns off his bike so they can't slide. It's about a sort of parenting. You feel like at the end of the film there should be a moment of, even if it's really cheesy, Robin, I can trust you.
They all put their hands in and go, yeah, we're a team.
Is that closure for you?
That's how you end it.
I mean, yeah, like, Robin and Batgirl shake hands and Batman puts his fist on their hands like, yes, I accept you all.
So they forget about the whole sort of Batman is basically Robin's father thing. They kind of forget about
that. They've got the father figure situation, yeah.
They do. And it's really, at the start, it's Robin trying to be treated like an adult.
Yeah.
And that never really... You never have a moment of Batman being like, you are a man now.
There's no proper parenting situation. It's not about actually... Not to use the pun like in this way, but it's about time that, you know, Robin leaves the nest.
Yes.
Well, that would make sense if that was in... If the next movie was meant to be him turning into Nightwing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of already thinking, I'm too big just to be a sidekick.
Too big for my britches.
I need to be Nightwing now. So he's almost getting into that phase.
Like, if we'd had the other film, that would have been like, why am I so fighting this? I don't care. It's a really crap storyline.
I know, but you know why? It's because you love Batman and you love the series so much.
I just feel like there's so many plots in this film.
No, the reason why I got you on the show is because you are the biggest Poison Ivy fan I think I've ever seen.
Thank you.
And I think
I've met bigger, and they are very supportive of my work, and they're amazing.
But this is the thing: it's like the only one I know that who is so big into Poison Ivy, and so I want to actually, honestly, know your true, honest opinion on her depiction, on Uma Thurman's depiction of Poison Ivy.
Well, we watched and read a lot of things to do with Poison Ivy on the research for our fan film because we wanted it to be the fan film, the one for the fans, the ultimate version of Poison Ivy that they've all been waiting for, they've really not had. So we researched a lot and this came up, and we all, and myself and producers, Robert Dukes and Ashton Diaf, who also play Bruce and Ivy in the film, and Ashton wrote the script, we all decided we wanted to make the anti-Uma.
Anti-Uma.
The anti-Uma.
That's how
bad it is.
I have
nothing against Uma Thurman. It's very strange casting, for a start. I mean, if you see Poison Ivy in the animated series, which is on at the time, she's, no offence to animated Poison Ivy, but she's petite. She's a petite, curvy woman. She's very intelligent, but she's not tall and statuesque.
Yeah.
And
she's supposed to be the ideal femme fatale, isn't she?
She is, but if you see her in the comics, like the very, very first comics, you can tell Joel Schumacher's a huge fan of the 60s Batman, because the very first introduction of Poison Ivy was her coming in and causing a rift between Robin and Batman. And
which is a plot line.
Which is a plot line. And in this film, but again, she's little. She's feminine, she's curvy, but she's not tall. And, you know, were there no redheaded actors available? Why do they never cast... Back then, they never cast redheaded actors. Why do they go for blonde? Same with Batgirl.
But here's a weird thing, though. We had Julianne Moore around the time.
Who would have been fantastic. Very, very intelligent scientist. And, you know, it was very, very strange casting. But basically, what we love about Poison Ivy is the fact that, obviously, her main goal is... Eco is the sort of saving.
She's an eco warrior.
She is an eco warrior. She's saving the planet, and a lot of the stuff she does is for a good cause. And you know, it's a lot of it is like shut up and worry about the big stuff, men, and trying to shut down big corporations, which is what people are doing today. If you look at the people in London doing sleep hours, try and get the big companies to listen to the climate crisis. It's a very good cause. That is her main thing. Yes, she can control men. Yes, she is emitting pheromones the whole time, which she can use to her advantage.
She is using her sexuality. This is something that is part of... But she uses it as a weapon.
Yeah, absolutely. A scent is a big part of a plant. She's part plant. She uses it to control people for a greater good.
Yes.
And you see her in this, and for some reason she's like a bumbling, awkward scientist who looks a bit dirty, and I find that quite offensive, it's like... So
what's interesting, though, is like that you, as being a Poison Ivy fan, and Aisling, who played Poison Ivy in your film...
Is a massive, massive fan.
Don't they appreciate this movie? In a funny way, this movie's about. This movie is like, even if you don't appreciate what they did with it, the characters, it's just a fun, entertaining movie, regardless.
Yes. We all had a laugh, but she starts out as this eco warrior who is bumbling and dirty looking, and it's kind of offensive. She's supposed to be. It's the fact that when she becomes, I mean, I like that they got Dr. Woodrue in there, because you very rarely see that story. And yes, Dr. Woodrue is, in the original comic version, the one that made Poison Ivy who she is. And I like that he's there, and I love John Glover as an actor. I like that it's very strange, because he basically chucks loads of stuff on her, and then she's like, I now have poisoned lips. The Earth has told me. And it's very...
I love that, though.
She knows straight away what her powers are, and what she is.
Dr. Isley? Pamela? You look great. Especially for a dead woman.
Hello, Jason. I think I've had a change of heart.
Oh, quite. Me?
Literally. Oh. The animal plant toxins had a rather unique effect on me. They replaced my blood with aloe, my skin with chlorophyll, and filled... my lips. With venom. Oh, and Jason, one other thing. I probably should have mentioned this earlier. I'm poison. It's a jungle in here. I am nature's arm. Her spirit. Her will. Help. I am Mother Nature. And the time has come for plants to take back the world so rightfully ours. Because it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature.
And this is the thing that they do differently in the movie, yes. where the idea is like, oh, you're just my assistant. Now that you're gorgeous. Oh, I love you. And obviously, poison yeah. lips, the whole situation. We all yes. know Poison Ivy's powers. Although, one power, can we talk about?
Yes.
That we're annoyed at, is that yeah. for someone who's supposed to be in charge of the Earth, right, yes. control Earth and plants and everything, she rarely controls plants as a defence mechanism in this entire movie.
That's the biggest thing. I mean, I know her look is... I mean, her look is 90s. We can yeah. forgive it because it's 90s. She looks halfway between Charlie's Angels and the Spice Girls with all this clever...
Definitely Jerry Halliwell.
Yeah, and the cones on the head like Scary Spice had. And I get it because I used to love that stuff, so that's probably why I loved Poison Ivy as a kid. I get it. It's a product of the 90s. The look, we can kind of forgive. What we cannot forgive is the fact... Well, I cannot forgive.
Wow.
It's the fact that Poison Ivy is strong. She uses sexuality as a weapon.
Yes.
And she can control plants, killer plants, poisons, chemicals. She has vines coming out of the earth strangling people. It's, yes. She's incredibly powerful. In this one, she only does the seducing thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
She only uses the plants to decorate. Don't get me wrong, I love a Poison Ivy.
And hangs up Batman once.
Oh, she does once. But the only majority once. Of it is about romance and, like, oh. And
all her strength comes from Bane.
She even says, I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Yeah.
So no, Bane.
She uses the Earth to fight back.
Absolutely. She got Bane to fight for. Even, and this ties in with the action figures, a wonderful line about the Poison Ivy action figure comes with Bane to do the fighting for her. And it's so backwards and horrible. Yeah. And, like, she finally gets a knife out to fight and gets distracted by her reflection in the night.
Yes! That was hilarious!
And the moment she meets...
Mr. Freeze.
Yeah, the brain freeze. The moment she forgets, meets Mr. Freeze, she's like, wow, he looks like a god. And suddenly she turns into this, like, gasping, scared woman, like, oh, my God, oh, my God.
I just
oh
gotta have him.
Oh, my God. And she, like, they come up to a cliff and she's like, oh, no. And it's terrible. I mean, they did exactly the same thing in the 90s with Robin Hood. Yeah. They introduced Maid Marian and she was in a suit of armour and she's supposed to be strong. But then soon she meets Robin, she's all like, oh, no, oh, gas.
So are we saying that the moment of... a strong, independent woman finds a somewhat rather attractive big man.
Yeah. It all fades away. And she doesn't need to be strong. And it's the opposite of what Poison Ivy is supposed to stand for, as many women out there.
In this movie, she is a sex pest.
Yes.
She's a total bit of a predator.
She forgets her overall motivation and just starts seducing people and ends up doing it to help Mr. Freeze, because she likes him and she fancies him.
But does she really? Because she did try to unplug his wife.
To get him for herself. And the other thing in the comics is that Poison Ivy is a very strong feminist and yeah. looks after women. Yeah. Would never hurt a woman.
Yes.
But an innocent woman in particular.
Her, like, main thing was, like, to get Mr. Freeze... To freeze the world to start again.
That was an afterthought at the end. For a while, she would have said, like,
was that her main motivation for getting Mr. Freeze involved?
It seemed like it. She was like, oh, look, he's a god. And then she said to the wife, I don't like competition.
Yes.
It's clearly a love thing.
One of the best lines in the movie is like, as I told Mrs. Freeze when I pulled her plug, this is a one-woman show.
Absolutely. And it's just bizarre. And she's just kissing men. And one final thing. Why does one of her plants attack her suddenly?
The giant plant throne eats her.
I get her being in a plant throne, that furry ivy, you know.
It's very sexy, I like it. But it's sexy, I like it. But
it suddenly turns on her.
Yeah, it just eats her.
And it's the opposite. For our film, we've gone very much. We are inspired by Nolan. We don't want it to be tacky in any way. We don't want it to be camp. We've talked about how camp this film is, and we want it to be realistic. Obviously, it's Ivy. She's a fantasy character, but it's very, very grounded in reality. Mm. And she is Ginger.
Yes,
Ginger has the wonderful Ashlyn is, and not. Red hair, and even her costume looks like it's made of the earth. She's not pulled on sequins. Because a lot of the books, a lot of the comics, Ivy does not wear clothes. Mm. She's a plant. Everything she wears is grown from herself. She only puts on clothes in the disguise. She would never put on tights and sequins.
She was so shiny, though.
Oh, for everyone, she was so sparkly and beautiful. Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is the big ball. Now, this is the ball that Bruce Wayne tries to negotiate to get Mr. Freeze out, because he knows on purpose that they're going after diamonds.
Yeah.
So he does this fake save the rainforest thing. It's basically a fake thing in order to get Mr. Freeze to arrive to steal the diamonds.
There's all these women being objectified on the stage and bidded for, and they're all looking pretty.
Yeah, it's like, here's 100,000 for the tiger lily.
And for the orchid. I want the blossom. It's disgusting.
And then Poison Ivy appears, first of all, in a monkey suit.
Looking like Booster from Arnold's other film.
Oh, yes.
What was it called?
What was it, Booster?
Jingle all the way.
Yes!
Booster.
Turbo Man's sidekick.
Get Booster up there, seriously. It was Booster.
And this is the thing that makes me giggle afterwards, right? So it reminds you more of like Rita Hayworth removing the clothing, something like that.
Oh, funny fact. So just the day before the Poison Ivy shoot, I got all the crew together because we wanted it to be a little bit Nolan, and we wanted it to be very film noir.
Yes.
Because that is the origins of great Batman. It's film noir, and Poison Ivy is a classic femme fatale character, and I mean, this film tried to hark to that with the Bane, as I'm sure you'll get onto, with the hat and the coat. But we did actually watch Gilda, Rita Hayworth's Gilda, which is a scene where she takes the glove off in that very sort of sexy striptease, which is just the removal of a glove.
Yes.
And we watched that all together to sense the tone and for performance inspirations. And so it was quite funny that we watched the actual Gilda for having an impact on a realistic, we hope, version of Ivy.
Yeah.
And the fact that they kind of do that here...
They kind of reference it.
Yes.
Although, you know what the weird one for me? When I watched it, I got a different idea. It reminds me of Jane Fonda and Barbarella. You know the beginning of Barbarella? When she's in the giant spacesuit and then she rips off to be floating naked. It kind of reminds me of that because the suit's ginormous.
Yeah.
And then once she removes the furry monkey suit...
And she doesn't make a sound, but everyone turns around to look at her.
Because you know what? Because that monkey's a sexy monkey.
But it's such a sexy monkey. It was dancing in which...
And they're already seduced, aren't they? Even when she's in the bloody costume.
It's like, oh my God.
Wait, what is this thing going on? Wow.
I would love the fact that someone's sitting there going like, wait a minute, why am I falling in love with a monkey?
Just imagine if you're that charismatic, even when you're in a monkey costume, before you're taking it off, people are already, who's that guy in the monkey costume?
Who's that monkey costume? Now, this then leads into Poison Ivy exposing herself and like revealing herself, basically.
Yes.
And this is where this is the scene that probably introduced the sort of like the pheromones, the little dust that's supposed to make them fall in love.
Yes.
And so Batman and Robin have an argument. Originally, one guy in the crowd says $500,000, and then Batman and Robin have an argument about how much Poison Ivy's really worth. And what does Batman pull out?
The Bat credit card.
Bat credit card. I think that is the point where the series died.
No, I disagree. I think it's the best moment in the film.
Really?
Never leave the cave without it. We had a bit of a phase on the run-up to making the Poison Ivy fan film where we were buying Batarangs, which is one of the most fun things I've ever done. When we were buying Batarangs and we were messaging each other secretly at work, being like, do you want the black one or the silver one? And I'm just talking about it, which was so much fun. And while we were on Etsy and I was looking at Batman props, I found the Bat card.
No way.
And they are available on Etsy, and Maker makes them. And I was so tempted to get it for Rob Dukes to give him on the day. Rob Dukes playing Bruce and be like, would you mind just pulling this out on set, please. And I chickened out in the end because budget was quite tight, but Rob, if you're listening, I nearly gave you one of those credit cards to hold.
Now the reason why I thought that's like the death nail, because
nipples was a death
nail. Well, okay, nipples may have been one
there's
of the
so many.
Yeah. There's so many nails in this coffin, right? But I would say the back credit card for me is a death nail, because how does the back credit card work?
That's the thing. If you think about it in too much depth, then it loses its, like, power.
It's fantastic as a gag. Just the never leave the cave around it, cut to the back card.
Yeah, but then the question is, then, how does it logistically work in this universe? The only way this can work is if Bruce Wayne owns a bank, his own bank, and he's technically secretly got a secret account that's basically under the Bat Bank. So he has his own separate money in the back credit card for his own...
Would it be like an American Express where, you know, you're supposed to use it in many shops, but a lot of shops would be like, oh, I'm really sorry, I don't take back card?
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the working machines.
Well, there's a little... On the card, there's a little logo that looks a bit like the Visa logo, but it says Goth card.
Yes.
Goth
I love it.
Card.
Yes. Perfect. So
it's like tiny. I've got to get like a picture of it.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's just I really want a prop.
I think personally, if
it might be Gotham card, but it looks like Goth card.
Goth card. No, I think it would be Goth card.
Yeah. I mean, there are pictures of it online. Like, so you can buy them on Etsy, yeah. and the detail, the puns written into this card. You're looking at it, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. But here's the thing, right? So at the end of it, yeah, I think like if you ever want a scene that sums up this movie 100%, I say it's that scene.
It's an incredible scene. It's massive. There's so much going on.
It's all about the extras.
The extras in this movie are amazing. I mean, like I said, apart from Batman, who is basically an extra in his own film. But But the extras are amazing. There's a bit where they unveil the telescope and the actors are like, they've never seen a telescope in their life. Like, wow! And there's an angry Texan man yelling out, like,
I would like $500,000 for that one!
Yeah, absolutely. And right at the end, the scientists.
Yes!
The scientists that are working on the telescope that end up somehow caught up in the final battle, and the
really
woman
well.
Gives an amazing face. She has got the best like screaming face going on.
When when her other scientist friend gets frozen, her face is amazing.
Just keeps screaming like,
oh my god, oh my god, oh
and
my
then,
god.
Like they get unfrozen, but they still get carried along. The telescope spins around, and one of them goes, "What a day!"
Yeah, and then there's like the prison guards. One of them is
the prison guard.
One of them is Jesse Ventura, the Jesse the Body Ventura, who's
the wrestling
big
professional
star.
Wrestler. And then the other one has an eye patch on because why?
Randomly, and they're really mean, and they're not really doing their job properly, and
they're the worst.
And just oh my god! I mean, that is attention to detail when you get an ex wrestler as an extra. And, of course, we all have one favourite extra.
Yes.
The dog.
Yay! Okay, so this is overall...
Perpetual pee.
Another of one of the side plots, basically, is the main plot, basically, is Mr. Freeze is going to freeze the entire planet.
Using
diamonds. Originally, the diamonds were there just so he can generate enough power and subtle things, not only for his suit, but also to help save his dying wife.
Which is the emotional core of the film. There's some lovely scenes.
And I have to admit, though, that those bits are really, really well done. Mm. Everything else, though, just fails in comparison. But then there's a bit where, eventually, he uses the telescope, as we mentioned, turns it into a freaking freeze ray and freezes all of Gotham, including a dog that's on halfway on the verge of a piss. And
it's a bulldog, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bulldog. And the thing is, can I honestly say, the moment he gets de-thawed, I don't think he ever gets a chance
to
finish.
No, he's like, I'm off. I'm not. I'm going to pee somewhere else. I'm not even doing this. It's not worth it.
Maybe he'd finished his pee, but that bit got frozen in the perpetual pee.
Maybe he got stage fright. I don't know.
And then he just had to snap it off and move on.
No! Worse!
You know that it's for kids when there's a dog and you show the dog surviving. And it's nice, you know.
Snap off and go.
Oh,
before then, speaking of extras, can I give you one quick factoid?
Is it about the extras?
Yes.
Okay.
Two extras were arrested and fired after attempting to sell secretly shot footage from the movie.
Was it the scientist?
I wouldn't be surprised. So basically, it's more like, hey, look, I'm in this movie. He's like, yeah, I don't believe you. Well, wait a minute, you know. So basically, two extras got fired because they were actually trying to sell footage they shot from the movie.
Well, like really crappy, like 90s phone footage or something.
No, it would be camcorder around this time. It's 1997.
Yeah.
Because no phones were that fancy.
No.
So they tried. They must have filmed some behind-the-scenes shots or something like that. And then, boom, try to sell it off. What a bunch of cheeky bastards. So we're introduced then to another character added into this.
Have you not had enough characters already in this film?
Batgirl. Girl. Now, Batgirl in the comics is Barbara Gordon.
Yes.
Who is basically the daughter of Commissioner Gordon.
Yes.
But in this, they changed it to be the niece of Alfred, so it's Barbara Wilson.
Yes.
So there's no reason why this is the case. Maybe it's because the way the characters have developed in the movies, Commissioner Gordon doesn't play a big part.
He's nothing to do with it, so there's
very
no
little.
Reason.
A Winnie the Pooh-voiced bumbling cop, basically.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
So she is half American, half British, because she is the niece of this of Alfred.
Yeah.
So she doesn't pull off an English. It means that they did that, so therefore she can get away with having an American accent, even though she's supposed to be the niece of a British butler.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, throughout this time, this then leads to one really fun sequence, which is the biker sequence.
Incredible sequence. Huge.
Awesome.
Oh, actually, there's one extra we have forgotten to mention.
Oh.
There's an amazing scene where they show all the gangs. Every gang you could ever want, including the Droogs.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So how did they get the rights to the Droogs? I don't know. And then,
very warriors. Very warriors. Like the movie The Warriors.
And then amongst the gangs, the man with all the gangs, Coolio.
How the fuck is Coolio in this movie?
Coolio. Because it's the 90s. They have everything 90s in this film. You've got Alicia Silverstone, you've got head cones, and then you have Coolio. In a gang.
Kind of cool.
And he looks fantastic. He looks amazing. He has like one line, but he looks amazing.
The action sequence of the whole driving thing was really awesome.
Incredible.
I mentioned that. It feels like a video game from like a PlayStation thing. It felt awesome. It's a really fun sequence.
What was interesting as well though is like the neon guys.
Yes. Oh, the neon guys before that. Yes.
Yes. Oh, they look incredible.
Yes, they do.
They look incredible. See, it's Poison Ivy and Bane go to get the old botanical baths so that she can create a wicked lair.
Yes.
Everyone loves a lair.
The lair was cool.
And you've got these guys that are basically lit by ultraviolet light the entire time, which is very nice. They look incredible.
They stand out so much. And we generally thought while watching the movie that they had a more prominent role.
Yes.
They're only in this one scene. There's so much effort for something that looks that cool.
All that happens is Ivy flirts with them and Bane beats them up.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
But
I'm sure I've seen a scene, right?
We made it up, buddy.
What's
that term?
They're going down the street.
Yes.
Like on bikes or something.
I thought they were in the bike scene.
And there's lots of neon. I can't remember them just being in like a lair and that she talks to them and that's it.
I know, I honestly think we made it up. So you have Alicia Silverstone, you have basically Robin, who sneakingly follow her because she's like, oh, I don't like bikes. Oh, wait a minute. She stakes taking bikes out like a sneaky sod and then goes on basically dirt bike races in awesome lairs. Like, that looks like the post-apocalypse. Where are they in Gotham that looks like this?
And they're all on that set. You can tell they're actually cycling on a bridge and biking on a bridge. And it's a real set. It would be CG these days, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and some of it looks like amazing artwork. Some of it's like really built. Some of it's CGI. It's all really built in to look like this really awesome world. Gotham looks awesome.
It's another unanswered plot thread. It's that whole scene with the whole building with Robin and Batgirl.
Ooh.
You think that's going to be something. You think that's going to be a relationship. They're chasing after each other. And by the end, it's forgotten.
Alfred, are you well?
As well as can be expected, sir.
My friend, I know you're sick. Now I can get you the best doctors.
I have seen the best doctors. A gentleman does not discuss his ailments. It is not civilized. I hope that I have taught you at least that much, Master Bruce.
Alfred, have you ever regretted your life working here.
Looking after heroes? No, sir. My only regret is that I was never able to be out there with you.
Not all heroes wear masks.
Intruder alert. Intruder alert. Intruder alert. Intruder alert. Identify. Identify.
Uncle Alfred, it's me, Barbara.
I expected you might find your way down here, child. As such, I programmed my brain algorithms into the bat computer and created a virtual simulation.
I'd like to help Batman and Robin.
I anticipated you would, and took the liberty to create something in your size.
Suit me up, Uncle Alfred.
Alfred's dying. Like, literally, suddenly he's, like, a little bit coffee, and then suddenly now he's in bed with a heart attack.
Yeah, suddenly there, yeah.
So, literally from a, I'm sorry, to like, oh, God, I'm dying!
I can't believe this was so comprehensible when I was a kid, you know. But
it made sense at the time, as completely. A kid. So then it says, like, give this to my brother, Wilfred.
Wilfred and Alfred, yes, I love it.
Pass it, and then she said, like, I'm family, I'm going to look this up. So being a bit of, again, another bit of a cheeky sod, looks at his private information, but then finds out about Batman and Robin, which then says, Alfred says, like, and it's really horrible, oh, I've always known that you would have found out eventually. I have copied my brain into the back computer. Because of course you can.
Everyone does it in comics. It's a thing.
How is Alfred so tech savvy?
I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway, okay, so
it's,
then...
Also,
it's kind of sad that, you know, like, he's so much of a gent, like an old-fashioned gent.
Yes.
That he doesn't discuss his illness with anyone.
Yeah.
So when he becomes really ill, he says to Bruce, like, he didn't know you were ill. And he says, well, I don't talk about these things. Yeah, and I thought I brought you up that well to say that gentlemen don't talk about their, like...
Yeah, which is a bad message to get.
It is bad because it's, like, very, very old-fashioned, that is, isn't it?
But that's the thing about this movie, I think, secretly. Yeah. This whole movie is about... It's about gender roles,
yeah,
but really bad ones.
Can I talk about Batgirl a little bit?
Yeah, let's talk about Batgirl properly. So she officially becomes Batgirl and goes and fights against Poison Ivy in a rather decent-ish sequence. Decent-ish.
You have the knife bit in that.
Yes, though, that's
you
true.
Know. But my issue with Batgirl is they kind of, I think, because they were aware. It's such a cockfest, and it's all about masculinity. I think they wanted to bring in Batgirl to be like, oh, let's bring in a strong female character. The strong female character should have been Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
For a start, because she always has been. Batgirl is brilliant, but she's not as strong as Ivy. Batgirl's brought in, and she is constantly sprouting paint-by-numbers, written-by-men feminism.
Yeah.
You're about to become compost. Yeah! Using feminine wiles to get what you want, trading on your looks. Read a book, sister. That passive-aggressive number went out long ago. Chicks like you give women a bad name. As I told Lady Freeze when I pulled her plug, this is a one-woman show. I don't think so. Curses!
However, there are shots of her crotch and her boobs just the same as everyone else. And how is she introduced, guys? I know you were paying attention.
But first, high heels
in a schoolgirl.
Oh, yeah, my God, yeah.
Schoolgirl outfit.
But first, schoolgirl outfit in short skirts.
Yeah, low angle of her. And she stands
almost
on
the thing. Almost up the skirt.
It was very close to a proper panty shot.
She stands on the plinth and leans up so the camera gets a better shot of her in a little skirt. Robin comes out and there's this pan up her body.
Yes, and then and then I think he's Robin says, like, say, I hope you're here to see me.
I know.
The thing is with Batgirl as well, in this movie, for example, she hasn't had any training.
No.
Any training. So why is she a superhero? Oh, wait a minute.
Should I? Oh, okay. This will actually enrage you, Sophie. But I have another factoid.
Like, I thought you'd done with a
factoid. No. I always throw them in when I can. So most of the scenes with Batgirl were cut, including a training sequence. Because Alicia Silverstone had gained a few pounds during production and the wardrobe team had to refit her costume. Now, when the press discovered the news, they slammed Silverstone's weight gain and mocked the actress for being too fat to fit in the costume.
Aww.
No one mocked George Clooney when they had to take his costume in.
Yes.
Double standards, people.
Joel Schumacher publicly defended Silverstone during the interviews and press meetings, well, joking, something. What is this girl's big sin? She ate some pizza, so what? That's the line.
That's not defending, is it?
Yeah.
That's like really...
When the taunting continued, Schumacher lashed out at the reporters that taunted her. He said in the interview, it was horrible. I thought it was very cruel. She was a teenager who gained a few pounds, like all of us do at certain times. I would confront female journalists and I'd say, with so many young people suffering from anorexia and bulimia, why are you crucifying this?
Well, that was good of him.
Yeah, that's good.
That was good.
But it's so surprising that there's literally loads of footage that has been cut because she was a little bit bigger than she started.
And some directors would have, like, had a go at her for like, gaining the weight and stuff. Like, especially at that sort of time. So that's kind of good that he was defending her.
So it was cut because of continuity to a point.
Yeah. Well, the script itself is still... She's saying a lot of supposedly feminist things to appeal to a female audience, but the way she's filmed, she's always backlit, she's always having a wind machine on her hair, and it's just
music video look.
Absolutely. The way she's filmed opposes what she's saying and the way she acts.
It's just not believable that she would be a superhero when you don't see how she's become a superhero.
She keeps acting like a bad girl. A bad girl is not a feminist. They are two different things. I mean, a bad girl could be a feminist, but it doesn't mean she's a feminist just because she's bad at times and steals a bike.
This whole movie is a very mixed message.
Yes.
Going back to how the movie is basically... Two different versions of feminism, two different versions of masculinity. Mm. And the main masculinity is basically a sword fight between Robin and Batman saying, who's going to bang Poison Ivy first?
Yes.
Yeah. And the whole this rips them apart. Yes, this is part of comic book lore, but at the same time, it's done in
not
literally like,
degree.
Oh, my big... It's basically a cockfight. My dick is bigger than your dick. Yes. That was basically what this is.
And they forget the fatherhood story, which is more touching than the fatherhood between Batman and Robin, for a dick fight.
Exactly. And you compare this masculinity to the other character we have to mention, Bane.
We are now talking Bane.
Bane. So, look, this is the thing. I'm actually a big fan of Bane. Not this one. Not this one.
Not
just telling
Johan, you surprised me. Not this Bane?
Not this Bane.
Oh, my goodness.
Because let me explain. Right, Bane was a fairly recent character in the comic books. Came out around the early 90s, right? Now, the thing was, he was already a famous luchador who basically got obsessed, who's basically got addicted to steroids. But he is actually incredibly intelligent and is actually the only person who's so strong is literally crippled Batman. This is the famous storyline that led to Batman breaking his back, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And he was articulate and smart and was able to use his strength, but was never a brain-dead husk like he is here.
Nolan gave us that. He was so intelligent in Nolan's Batman. Bane was.
Bane was good in the Arkham games as well.
Yeah, because I think what it is, I kind of liked more... Christopher Nolan's Bane, but I thought two things were wrong with that Bane. Number one, the voice is by far the worst thing I've ever seen.
What was that voice?
And he's not big enough. Bane is like a tank.
He is huge.
And he was big in this. He looked the part.
He looked the part, but didn't act the part. And Bane in the Batman series, in the Dark Knight series, acted the part, but didn't look the part. So it's kind of like if you merge those two together somehow, you would have got the perfect depiction of Bane. Because he is so full of venom. basically, in this movie, that he is so he can't speak to the point that we laugh at the movie because he only has at least six lines and they're all one word. They're just, like, exit, just honey.
Repeating bat. The last line that someone else said.
Yeah, bat.
But sometimes he does try and talk in grunts, like... yeah, he's the chauffeur to Poison Ivy. It's kind of film noir style scene, so
oh
I like
God,
that.
Oh my God, we're first introduced him properly afterwards in a whole hat and suit, aren't we?
Yes, he's in a film noir coat.
Just imagine that. You know how he repeats the last word?
Yes.
And like, you know, you got your Poison Ivy setting. Just imagine if Poison Ivy mentioned a long flower name like Mesembryanthemum.
Mesembryanthemum.
Would Bane say?
I would love that! Like, you'd be like the world's hilarious tongue twister.
Let me see if I can think of a real one. Hang on. Nectarscordum siculum.
Mesembryanthemum is a real flower.
That's a real flower?
It is, because I had it on a spelling test.
Ooh.
When I was in primary school. Yeah. You
go
can
on,
spell
then.
It.
Go.
Mesembryanthemum.
Yay! Well done.
I never had one.
Because that was a spelling test, so I've always ingrained. I've always remembered it. And you know how you remember a big word? You break it down into parts. So if you break it down, mesim, Brian, the mum.
So here's a question then. Do you think then how would you do the impression of that one done by Bane in this movie?
Well, it would just be like grunty kind of like.
On, say it. Do an impression.
It would be like breaking down like I did it. Like, Mr. Brian the Mum.
Yay! Well done. Fantastic.
Shall we just quickly spoiler?
Yes.
He does kind of save the day, Mr. Freeze.
He does, because going back to the main plot line, as it were, right, somehow using stupid science.
Just science, general science.
General science. Magic science. Batman, Robin and Batgirl are able to thaw out all of Gotham City.
These heaters will thaw them.
I hope you got about 10 million more of those little toys.
8 more minutes and a city full of Gothamites or ice cubes forever.
Sunlight could reverse the freezing process.
Well, sunrise isn't for 5 hours.
Here.
But it's morning in the Congo.
If we could relay the sunlight.
From the other side of the equator.
It'll take the satellites about a minute to realign, but... Damn.
Damn's not good.
Those targeting mirrors are frozen. The thawing beam won't work.
All right, I'll set the telescope, you thaw the mirrors.
Tonight's forecast. A freeze is coming.
And then, by this point, Batman says to... actually says something quite profound, where it's like saying, you know, I'm not here to take life, I'm here to restore life. And says, like, and he actually begs Mr. Freeze, look, I have a close friend of mine who's on stage one of the same thing that your wife's having.
Coincidence,
right? Can you help me? I will help you if you help me.
Help his wife. And
And says, like, okay. So he happens to have it on him.
Handy little pouch on his arm.
The line, though, when he opens it up and it's...
Yes, you want to say it?
He says, take two of these. And
call me in the morning!
And, like, he happens to have the antidote that Arthur needs, but it's very sweet. And, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger, probably his contract.
Yes.
I will work on this film. I need to save the day, though.
He needs to save the day somehow, even though he's a bad guy.
No, but the thing is, like, Mr. Freeze is always kind of motivated by, like, helping his wife.
Basically, this movie, in a weird way, even though Mr. Freeze is sort of the villain we all like... Poison Ivy's a main villain.
Yeah.
And
she's a bitch.
She's a total sex-filled bitch.
Yeah.
While Mr. Freeze is sort of the anti-hero of the movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
The thing is, Mr. Freeze and Ivy are both villains with good motivation.
Yes.
They're both doing it for good causes. But this film makes Ivy into a sex-crazed bitch with no power.
Yeah.
And it makes Mr. Freeze into an action hero with a machine gun.
I love it.
Okay.
I love it. overall, we've rewatched this now. We've finally seen the whole thing. We broke down all our favourite parts. That's all of our worst parts. We've defended every character and bashed every character. Yes. And so we need to basically say, overall, what do we think of this movie, watching it again after so long?
I still remember why I loved it as a kid.
Yeah.
I think, like, still seeing that ice scene, I'm taken back to being in the cinema, the spectacle of it, the whole Gotham freezing and, oh no, what the hero is going to do. Mm. I think it's still a great kids' film.
Yeah.
And you know what? Partly because I remember how much I loved it and how much it meant to me as a kid, seeing it. There's that element.
Yeah.
It's still so much fun. I mean, you can't watch Batman and Robin surfing through the sky for no reason.
Yeah.
Without being like, you know, I love this.
It's fun.
It's great. If it came on the TV on a Sunday afternoon and you had a day off, you'd watch it.
I think so.
Yeah.
And it's not like any of the Batman movies that were supposed to be serious. But you know what? If this was its own separate entity in its own bubble, it's really fun.
I don't think it's any worse than Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I'd argue with that.
And I enjoy Suicide Squad a bit, you know,
I enjoy this much more than Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
But
There's no but. I even though George Clooney is shit,
yes,
and you can tell he's shit because he doesn't want to be there, I still find that hilarious and I find it entertaining.
Mm. Yes.
And I like, obviously, Arnie is amazing.
Yeah.
It's just so, like, all the ice puns make the movie. I don't care the plot shit, and I like how crap Batgirl is, but still great at the same time. It's all the flaws for some reason make it amazing to me.
I think it is all the right levels of camp.
Yeah,
it's very camp. It's very fun. There's so many things wrong with it.
It feels like a sketch show parody of Batman.
And you should enjoy that.
Yeah, if French and Saunders did something like this, I would howl my socks off.
And that's the thing. It's like, for example, I think, honestly, for me, the saving grace is Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
You can see he's having a whale of a time. He's enjoying it. And the only other time I've seen a villain in a Batman movie enjoy himself that much was Jack Nicholson playing the Joker.
True.
All the other times have been sort of been like phoned in or half-assed or didn't really match, right?
Yeah.
This, Arnold Schwarzenegger is the only reason why you should really watch this movie.
You go along with him. He's enjoying himself and you enjoy it with him, don't you?
Exactly.
The fact that he's actually openly smiling and...
I think this is a whale of a time. The only thing is you have to not at all go in there thinking it's going to be faithful at all to any Batman lore.
You have to accept it's the 90s as well.
Yes.
It's the most 90s film, and a lot of it... I mean, the feminism isn't good, but 90s was on a kind of a turning point with that stuff.
Yeah.
It's reminiscent of that time.
Mm. Exactly. So, yeah. So before we sort of wrap up then, Sophie, thank you very much for being here. It's really been fun to have you on the couch. It's
our first guest.
I know, right? So...
Not just me and Johan talking about films. We've got someone else talking about films.
My goodness. So, in other words, any guys listening out there, if you want us to have more guests, please tell us. Like, to, you know, put some comments in or share along this and say, oh, we want more guests, we want more people. You know, we'll find some more guests. We'll get some more people on our very tiny sofa and get that sorted. So, Sophie, your Poison Ivy movie, when is it coming out, roughly?
We're expecting that by the time this goes live, it should be out. It'll be available to view on our social media channels. So, if you find Triskel Pictures on Facebook, which is quite a hard spell, or find me, probably easier to spell, Sophie Black on social media, then by the time it comes out, we should be able to link you to the film.
And I cannot wait to see it.
Thank you.
We'll definitely know it'll be better than Uma Thurman's prediction of...
We hope so. We've tried everything we can do with Ashlyn Diaz's performance to be the anti-Uma.
Fantastic.
The anti-Uma.
that is my Ashlyn.
That actually sounds like a boss battle at the end, the anti-Uma. So, we'll leave that as a note. So, until next time, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time.
See you guys.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.